Hey there, welcome to another episode of Jason Rants the Leftovers. This is where we bring you some extra content each and every day. Unless, of course, I forget. And I only forgot once. Stop judging me. I forgot one time. And I was really tired. It's not my fault. In any case, earlier today, I was on with Guy Benson on his radio show. If you haven't heard it yet, that is a mistake. You should be tuned in to KTTH Live from noon to 3 each and every weekday. And you'll be able to hear the Guy Benson show right before my show starts from 3 to 7. And we were talking about a number of local issues, but also we started off by talking about a national issue that I know a lot of you are paying attention to, which is Daniel Penny. This is the guy who helped save a train full, a subway car full of folks from a very dangerous and aggressive, mentally unstable homeless guy. And he ends up getting charged, Daniel Penny. He's the one who gets charged. So we talked about that. We talked about the madness of Seattle policing, the madness of how cops are getting harassed, and the madness of homelessness policy. Here's how that went.
Back on the Guy Benson Show, GuyBensonShow.com online. Thanks for listening. We welcome back to the airwaves Jason Rants, who is host of the Jason Rants Show on KTTH, our great affiliate in Seattle. Be sure to buy and read his first book, What's Killing America, a theme that we return to frequently on this show, and he does on his as well. Jason, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
A couple things I wanted to get your reaction to. First, I saw that you were displeased with ABC News in their framing of a story out of New York City, so the other side of the country from where you are. But here is how ABC News gave an update to its audience about the case of Daniel Penny. Just in, Daniel Penny, the former Marine who choked a homeless man to death last May on a New York City subway car, will stand trial beginning October 8th, a judge determined Wednesday. And you called that shameful and despicable, but, like, I'm not even surprised, right? I mean, this is what they do.
It is what they do. None of us should ever be surprised, but we should always call it out because there are lots of folks who don't follow the news as closely as we all do. The folks who are listening right now, we are the outliers. Most people do not even get this much information about any of these stories. And oftentimes, especially if they're just perusing online, whether it's X or Facebook or anywhere else, they might just look at a headline. They don't always click even to get the full story. And this might be their takeaway. And it's all about frequency, right? And so we have to do a better job of always putting out the truth over and over and over again if we need to, because it's always going to reach someone else. And anyone who tries to define what Daniel Penny did as simply choking a homeless man to death is just a disgrace. It's absolutely a disgrace. And it does a disservice to the work that he did to protect people who were in desperate need of protection that day.
You and I follow the news pretty closely, and so we know the name Daniel Penny. There was some sort of violent confrontation in public, whether it was on public transit or elsewhere, where a bunch of people just sort of watched while this all went down, while there was violence occurring. And a lot of the comments were, why won't anyone intervene? Why won't the men get involved?
Yep.
And a lot of people just respond to that with photos of, you know, Daniel Penny in handcuffs. That's why.
Precisely. And it's interesting. We had an instance here in Seattle on our light rail system of a man being approached by someone else and just randomly attacked. And he was stabbed multiple times. And I just got a hold of the surveillance footage. And it's as disturbing as you might think. But what I was noticing was a whole bunch of people who just watched it. One guy was literally a few feet away and just watching it. And I don't, in that case, I mean, it was a stabbing, right? So there was a weapon involved. And I don't know if anyone's going to just willingly or quickly jump to the rescue. But the level of, just the casualness, I guess, of watching something like this happen.
Apathy.
Is just, yeah, it's just disturbing. And, you know, no one knows how they might respond in a circumstance like this, but I'm not going to get mad at the people who decide to step forward and actually do something. I might have some anger towards the people who choose not to, but I cannot blame someone now choosing not to get involved, at least in a place like New York, where you're the one who's likely going to get charged rather than the criminal. And in this case,
Daniel Penny, as you recall, I mean, a Marine, stepped in because this man was out of his mind, menacing people, threatening people, making extremely disturbing threats to people, and he subdued this man. He eventually died. A bunch of witnesses 100% took Penny's side, and Daniel Penny ends up in handcuffs and in jail. There was the bodega owner who fought off two attackers, killed one of them. He ends up in jail until there was a public outcry, and then Alvin Bragg reversed himself. The viral video this week of a woman who changed the locks on her own house to thwart some squatters who were living there, she's the one who ends up getting arrested. I mean, it really does feel like law-abiding people in New York are suckers and idiots, and you should just kind of let the criminals have their way lest you end up behind bars. I mean, it is failed society-level stuff. I'm not sure it's widespread enough in the country that it's a massive, like, survival-level panic for the country, but not great signs from certain canaries in certain coal mines, i.e. subway cars, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's taking us clearly in the wrong direction. I agree with you. We're not seeing this happen, thank God, all over the country. But, you know, what happens in New York doesn't just stay in New York. It has a tendency to spread, and this is the epitome of what we talk about when we look at this ideological response from folks within the criminal justice system. They believe that criminals are the true victims. They're victims of an unjust society. They are victims of systems of oppression. And thus, anything that the criminal does is not even necessarily their fault. And so they look at you as someone with privilege actually pushing back against this. And you are just perpetuating the white supremacy culture and the oppressive systems, blah, 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 blah. They do this all the time. And this is what it looks like when you go ahead and institutionalize those ideological perspectives. And even if it's not happening on a massive scale, if we don't push back in significant ways, politically speaking, well, then it will become nationwide. And we're all going to have to deal with this regardless of where it is people live.
And a lot of this gets then fought out in the criminal justice system, which, at least in your state of Washington, Jason, might feature a bunch of new lawyers who haven't passed the bar exam because apparently the bar exam has been deemed racist or something? What is this?
You say that with such a question in your mind. I mean, everyone knows the bar exam is incredibly racist because it disproportionately and unnecessarily blocks historically marginalized groups from entering the practice of law. This was the basic argument that was made. And this whole thing started in 2020. This was November of 2020. So we're talking about really almost the height of the BLM movement where everything was deemed to be racist. And they said, we don't have enough, quote unquote, lawyers of color. So what can we do to ensure that we have more lawyers that look like the community, quote unquote? And so we knew, of course, what they were going to do is just claim it's a racist system. We just didn't know it was going to end like this. And what they basically argued was that in order to pass the bar, you have to study a lot. And to study a lot means you might not have time to go to work.
And by the way, Kamala Harris failed the bar exam when she first tried. So maybe she's helping make this point, Jason. Please continue.
Well, yes, perhaps. But I mean, the basic argument is that if you're black, it's harder for you to take time off of work in order to study. And so it's unfair to have black people have to take the bar. It is so ludicrous. Now, they have alternatives to become a lawyer. And, you know, I've talked to some lawyers who say, you know, they're not even necessarily opposed to looking at alternative ways to judge one's competency, but it's the underlying reason behind their decision here that's the biggest problem. Because if you're going into the system saying that the black person who couldn't pass the bar exam because of racism, if they go through this alternative path, which is, you know, doing a certain amount of hours, basically apprenticeship with a lawyer. During that apprenticeship, do they then say, well, because this person is a victim of a, you know, systemic oppressive culture, do they get a little bit of a shortcut and maybe don't have to work the same amount of hours? Are we making excuses in other ways?
Or do they just not have to be as good in front of the judge?
Precisely. And
like, is the burden of proof for them lower, like the burden of everything is lower because it's all such a racist system? I mean, yep. I feel, this is just me, if I were in need of legal representation, which hopefully I never will be, but if I were in that position, I would probably want someone who passed the bar exam. Because you look at, I mean, there's a lot of lawyers running around, Jason. They all managed to pass the bar exam. I'm sure it is a lot of studying and a real challenge, but that's kind of what you sign up for when you decide to go to law school and take the LSATs and become a lawyer and graduate from law school and then study for the bar and then pass. These are things that you have to do as a barrier to entry into a specialized profession that, again, it's a higher bar, but it's not like every single lawyer in America is some sort of epic genius. I think it's fair to say that.
Fonnie Willis is a lawyer.
District attorney.
Exactly. But she has she passed the bar.
Michael Avenatti,
perfect example.
Right, go down the list. I feel like there should be baseline standards in society for things. Because, by the way, I mean, and we're seeing this in different respects. If they're going to do this in the legal profession, what about the medical profession?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, you know, do you really have to pass those board exams? Do you really have to go? Is it racist to force someone to go and do a residency? I mean, mm-hmm. you can really start expanding this concept in ways that are more and more ludicrous. And I would say, well, we shouldn't even discuss those hypotheticals because it's probably a bridge too far.
Well, it's already happening.
Not.
But it's not a bridge too far because it's already happening in some regard. When you start looking in particular with medical schools, you see here in Washington, we certainly have seen a different standard of admission. The whole idea is to have a class of students that is, quote unquote, more representative of the community. And so what we've seen is just basically taking away certain spots from students unless they check some boxes from a racial perspective. And that was actually hurting Asian students here in Washington State and white students who were, quote unquote, disproportionately represented by the admissions process. And so I don't want to lower standards when, you know, my freedoms are on the line life is on the line. Yeah, for anything. We just shouldn't be doing that. You should address, if there's a legitimate issue, and I've said this from the beginning, if there is a legitimate issue as to some sort of racism that's involved that is stopping someone who happens to be black or Latino or whatever from being able to reach an accomplishment that otherwise they should be reaching, rather than punishing everyone and bringing everyone down, why not raise the people up? Why not address why there's a disproportionate number of people not being represented or overrepresented? Just address the underlying cause.
That's not the point.
Yeah, of course not.
Like that's the whole ballgame here. It's a cynical take, but it is the correct take. There is an agenda at play, right? That's what that's really about. And mm-hmm. it actually brings us to another topic that you've written about out there in Seattle. And what is this about? There was a police officer who's now in trouble because he or she was racing to a crime scene in a lane that he wasn't supposed to be driving in.
Like,
it's
again, worse.
It's just, I say this almost every time we speak, Jason, I don't know how you keep your sanity out there.
Oh, I know. It's a lot of crying and self-loathing, I think. But here's just the baseline of this. So Seattle Police Department, like many departments around the country, have oversight agencies that are independent, civilian-led. They handle any complaint that comes in against a cop. And so I got a hold of an email that was sent from the director of that oversight unit, basically telling the Seattle PD that, yeah, they're going to continue to investigate any complaint that comes in for an officer who violates a traffic violation or a traffic law, even in service of, you know, responding to a 911 call. And the reason why this was such a big deal is the precinct that got this email from the director has a piece of downtown Seattle that is, if not the most dangerous, it's one of the most dangerous in all of the city. They're constantly being called there. Except in that area, there's bus-only lanes from 6 to 9 a.m. in the morning and then 3 to 6 p.m. in the evening. And so the only way that an officer would be able to respond to a call there would to be driving, technically illegally, in a bus-only lane. And so every time they do that—
It's a cop.
But it doesn't matter to these folks because they are going after cops. The whole reason why they're now doing these investigations is just to continue to harass. And of course, the Alt Weekly in the Seattle area is now asking the readers who also hate cops, hey, make sure you file these reports. All you have to do is do X, Y, and Z, and they will be investigated. It's going to be just a nonstop harassment campaign. And it's ludicrous.
And what's happening to the police force in Seattle again there?
Yeah,
Jason?
They're not doing so well. I've got a story next week about the true staffing numbers, which even shocked me at how low they are. And they're not recovering. They have not recovered in any meaningful way since the 2020 BLM riots and rallies and the defund movement. So we are losing cops at record high numbers. We're at record lows right now. It is not looking good, and this, of course, makes the case as to why so few want to be cops here.
Last but not least, Jason, you witnessed something very disturbing the other day. You said it highlights the failures in your city. What did you see?
Yeah. So I was on my way back from a speech. It was early in the morning, and I thought what I saw were two homeless people fighting. So I did what I normally do, which is, of course, take out my phone and start to record. But then I quickly realized, oh, this is not a fight. This is someone doing chest compressions on this man. He was outside of like a 7-Eleven on the sidewalk. He was clearly homeless. And I start hearing the fire department come. So I see them and then I leave. And As I left, I was like, I wonder what happened to this guy. So I did some investigation. I found out precisely who it was, who was that person. He's just a 30-year-old guy. He died. He died of a drug overdose, specifically fentanyl and meth. And I just sort of went down this rabbit hole of finding out who this guy was, getting his background. And I couldn't help but wonder if we had policies that were not so soft on crime, if we had policies that didn't say, hey, homeless people, you can do whatever it is you want, wherever it is you want. If we actually took this seriously, would this 30-year-old guy, would he have died? Or would he still be alive, maybe living a productive life? And obviously, you know, if you're an addict, you're an addict. It's not always easy, but we certainly make it really easy to be an addict and not get treatment.
No,
and
they call
I think
it
he
compassion.
Failed. Yeah. Oh, yes.
They call it compassion, and then you witness a 30-year-old dying in the streets, which is not an outlier situation in the city of Seattle, which is, I think, the worst part of it, underscoring your point. Jason Rantz, trying to keep the sanity train chugging even slowly in greater Seattle on KTTH, our great affiliate here. Jason, as always, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break. And
again, that was me on The Guy Benson Show. I hope you'll tune in to The Guy Benson Show from noon to 3 in case you don't already know. It's appointment listening, as is all of the shows on KTTH. From Brian Suits into Dan Bongino into Guy into me into Ben into Michael Knowles, then, of course, Mark Levin, I hope you'll tune in each and every day. Thank you so much for tuning in to this podcast, and I will see you tomorrow.